Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. At hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
And welcome to In the Know, the Hornets 24/7 podcast. Your knowledgeable hosts are Michael McNamara.
Me and a grizzly bear, I'm betting on me.
And me, Ryan Schwan.
I've been playing some Dungeons & Dragons because I'm really cool like that.
Let's get it started. All Hornets, all the time.
Welcome to the show. The Hornets just dropped a game in Portland by one after roaring back. And on Friday, they lost the game to the Timberwolves as Nikola Pekovic stomped all over us. Michael, I have one question for you. What was that last play of the Portland game?
You're down by three. You just had a huge shot hit against you by, you know, the front runner for Rookie of the Year. I don't know what else you could possibly draw up other than a lob pass to Lance Thomas at the rim when you're down three. To me, that's option A, B, and C.
I mean, they did try to run two guys to the perimeter, and they recovered. So I guess this is the third option, the hope that Lance Thomas would be fouled as he put in a lob. I'm completely flabbergasted. I have no idea what the hell.
Yeah, I mean, and our three-point shot, I mean, Ryan Anderson was off. He was only 7 for 10 from behind the arc in this game. So there's no reason to get it done. But, yeah, I mean, it was a
I'd rather have him shooting from half court than what ended up having that. I mean, past half court.
Yeah, because I'd like to see that shot that NBA teams do at halftime when they give away like 75 grand where they have them shoot it from the opposite free throw line. That had better than
a lob.
Yeah. I don't know. It's frustrating. It was a frustrating game, especially after the blowout against Minnesota, which we'll talk about first. But, you know, these games, when you're having a losing streak like this, sometimes you would prefer a 20-point loss to what the Hornets suffered tonight. This is it's hard to do the podcast right now, but I'll get into my more objective mode and travel back in time to the Minnesota game where we didn't have to worry about the last minutes of the game because Minnesota just absolutely pounded us on the glass, and that game was pretty much out of hand midway through the third quarter.
Yeah. I mean, they played fine for the first half of it. But, I mean, this is all you have to hear. Robin Lopez, one rebound, 25 minutes. If you're playing one big man as your center for 25 minutes and all he can manage is one rebound, there's no way you're controlling those glass.
Yeah. And that was an offensive rebound that came off of a pretty ugly shot. And you know, it didn't change. Again, just looking over the course of our two games, 45 minutes he has played since our last podcast, and he has grabbed 2 defensive rebounds.
Yeah.
So yeah.
And I watch him, and he's doing the right things, but the man can't leap. And he can't move, so he'll get them on his back, he'll box out, but they just take one quick step around him, and he's out of the picture. And then all he can do is just try to hold them away from the basket. He doesn't have a chance at grabbing a rebound anymore because his entire, you know, everything he's doing is just predicated on trying to push that guy away so he can't jump up and grab an offensive rebound. There's no option of him grabbing a defensive rebound in that situation. So it's just, it's a major problem. I used to think there was a major difference between Robin Lopez and Brook Lopez, and I always laughed at Brook Lopez because of his horrible rebound rate. I mean, Robin Lopez and Brook Lopez in my world really aren't all that different.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's because a lot of rebounds do come down to those, you know, 50-50 balls and just the ability to either snatch a ball or make the slightest move in one direction in order to put yourself in the proper position. And just, you know, Lopez can't do either of those things. Davis got about, you know, the same amount of playing time in that Minnesota game. And even though, you know, there were situations where he was, you know, against Kevin Love, who has, what would you say, conservatively, 40 to 60 pounds on him, you know, yeah. Davis was still able to find ways to grab rebounds. That was the bad from this game. I mean, we've got to at least talk about the good. Let's talk about some good while that Portland loss is still in our head and try to get ourselves, you know, in a good mood. I mean, obviously the good from this game is Austin Rivers, 27 points on 14 shots, hit 5 out of 6 of his threes. And, you know, afterwards, Monty said that Austin Rivers has been putting in countless hours with 2 assistant coaches, which I think we all expect that he would. And the results have shown, not just in the fact that the ball is going through the basket over these past 5 or 6 games, but the form is completely different. I mean, there's a couple highlight tapes of just Rivers from that game, and that kick out of the right leg when he shoots and the drastic fadeaway is all but gone. There's still a small fade. Well, you know, at least this week it is. Who knows if it'll return? But, you know, that drastic fade is gone. There's still a small fade, and he's not kicking out that right leg when he shoots anymore. It's a much more balanced and controlled-looking shot, which I think, you know, we'll continue to see nights closer to these and less of the 2-for-15 type of nights, in my opinion.
Yeah, and he's also the game is starting to slow down for him to the point where he's making better decisions when he does get to the rack. His shots, he's giving himself more room to get over these bigger, taller, faster guys that he's never seen before. So he can get to the rim, and he's getting very good at kissing it high off the glass. The ball doesn't always go in sometimes, but that's something that you have to learn and develop. If that's not what you've done your entire career, you've got to figure out how to hit that shot. And he's slowly getting there. And like I said this like 2 or 3 weeks ago, I'm not really that worried about Rivers anymore because I see him out there making at least strides and intelligent basketball plays where you can feel that, you know, at least there is a chance he will succeed. Maybe he'll never be strong enough or fast enough to hit those shots. It's still a possibility, but at least he's making the adjustments he needs to make those to put himself in a position to succeed, which is things we don't see all the time from young players, such as, you know, good old Al-Farouq Aminu, who got 8 minutes in this last game. But I don't want to jump ahead, so. Even in that in the game against Minnesota, he still got 25 minutes, 8 rebounds, 6 points. But every single point he had happened in the first, I think it was 2.5 minutes of the game. I had a couple fast break. One was a lob, and then he hit a mid-range jumper off of a handoff. And after that, non-entity.
Yeah, and I mean, that's the offensive end. But Monty made a point to come out after the game And he didn't say our defense played bad or our defense allowed a lot of backdoor cuts. He specifically said our small forwards were horrible on picking up backdoor cuts and, you know, on their rotations. Specifically went with that position, and Al-Farouq started at that position, played more than half of the game at that position, and then the next night he only gets 8 minutes. Oh, and not to mention the Hornets in between games signed a, you know, small forward in Dominique McGuire, who, you know, has kind of been passed around the league, but is somewhat known if by anything for his defense. So, I think that game put Aminu in a doghouse that's going to be very hard for him to crawl out of.
Well, I mean, it was embarrassing, and I mentioned it in the recap that I wrote. And I didn't actually call it out in quite the terms I probably should have. I said that there were 5 backdoor cuts to the rim by Andrei Kirilenko. And that may not sound like much in a game, you know, that has like 90 shots, 5 of them being backdoor cuts. You know, they were 5 uncontested, unchallenged, wide open dunk backdoor cuts that are the simplest sort of play as long as you know where your defense was, as long as you know where your man is. And the Hornets and Miller was a problem there. Henry's a problem there, but Aminu was a problem there 3 times. They would just look away from him. The guard would get a little penetration and they'd reach out to try to, I don't know, maybe strip the ball. Like that's going to happen very often. And simple bounce pass to Kirilenko and a dunk. This is just basic defense. There's not supposed to be, you're not supposed to even have to worry about rotations in these situations, because all you have to do is take one step back if you're in the right position and you're bumping the guy off his line and he's not going to get the dunk. And you can expect that to happen a couple times a game, but if it happens 5 times a game by the same guy, your defense is stupid.
Yeah, and I mean, the sad part is that, well, you know, maybe Monty didn't think he had any options. I thought you made an interesting suggestion after tonight's game of what the Hornets should do at the small forward position with putting Lance Thomas in, and I can't say I disagree. But, yeah, in that game, it was just, you know, with Rivers playing that well, Davis, you know, playing efficiently, Anderson, frankly, outplaying Kevin Love in most, if not all, areas, and Vasquez able to get certain, you know, in places where he wanted to go because such a poor defender in Luke Ridenour or sometimes Jose Barea was covering him. I mean, that was a winnable game not for just the absolutely, you know, horrid play of Al-Farouq Aminu.
Yeah, well, I mean, there's also the fact that the Hornets, again, weren't contesting long-range shots. This is the Minnesota Timberwolves are the worst shooting team in the NBA from 3. They're shooting 29% on the season. Part of that's because Kevin Love is one of their best shooters, and he's shooting terribly anyways. But, I mean, Luke Ridenour went 3-of-3. Alexei Shved went 3-of-4. I wouldn't even be that upset about them hitting those kinds of shots if they were contested. But they weren't. They just worked the ball around, and then somebody got an open shot. So this is the kind of stuff that's starting to bother me. You figure out somebody's got to, you know, start doing something right for these perimeter defenses. But then, of course, you get back to the fact that there's no speed on this team on the perimeter, which is, again, why probably Dominique McGuire has been signed.
Cut you off. Let me ask you this, because the claim sometimes by you and oftentimes by others has been that once Eric Gordon returns, a lot of these Aminu and other, you know, other players' deficiencies will be shored up because he does so much. Do you still buy that, or, you know, would it matter one lick if Eric Gordon was on this team with regard to how Al-Farouq Aminu is playing?
I would say that crunch time, yes, because Eric Gordon would be put on their best score. It's not going to help us necessarily on the rotations, but at least you have one fast guy on the perimeter and that will help. I mean, the Hornets have no fast guys on the perimeter right now. I mean, Austin Rivers is average at best. Grievous Vasquez is clearly below average. Aminu should be above average, but he isn't because he doesn't know what he's doing.
All right.
So, I mean, yeah, do I think Eric Gordon is going to make the perimeter defense suddenly awesome? No, but at least it'll help a little bit. So I got murdered for my recap because I didn't mention Grievous Vasquez's line, his career-high 17 assists. I probably should have mentioned the fact he got a career-high 17 assists, but I was generally irritated by that game, and here's the thing that bothered me the most. Grievous Vasquez had 15 points on 14 shots. He had 17 assists, and 5 rebounds. Sounds great. 4 turnovers isn't even that bad when you have 17 assists. Luke Ridenour had 15 points and 10 assists in 5 less minutes on 6 shots instead of 14. So essentially, he neutralized Vasquez scoring-wise on less than half the number of shots, and also pulled out 4 steals from Vasquez. So 17 assists. I'm not going to disagree. Vasquez has a very good ability of knowing where his players are and delivering them the ball in a position to shoot. I'm not going to question that. But he's a bad defender, and he's not an efficient scorer. And you can look at these big number games, and if you just take a moment and you step back and you look at his overall efficiency and how many minutes he's playing when he gets them, he's at best average.
Yeah, I mean, Austin Rivers had the game of his life in that game, and he had a true shooting percentage of 86%. Luke Ridenour's was 110%, which I don't even know if I've ever seen before. But, yeah, he was hitting absolutely everything, wasn't even contested on most of them, had an offensive rating of 195. I didn't even know it went that high. So if people are going to go out there and just look at the simple stats of Vasquez, and I mean, spoiler alert for those who haven't seen the Portland game yet, he had another great, box score in the Portland game. But first of all, I don't buy the 4 assists. The 4 turnovers. My tally had 6. I don't know how the home officiators are officiating officials are helping him out, but I would be shocked if anybody could go back to that game and only count 4 turnovers. I didn't really see him control the game, and I don't know. I'm just shocked by those assists. If I was surprised when I looked at the box score and saw those assists. I guess I'll just put it that way. I don't know. I thought it was an average game at best, but I feel like an idiot saying that when the box score says what it does. But I didn't feel like we had an above average point guard on our side in that game.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I won't say I didn't look at that game and say Vasquez was our problem, which I have said in the past in certain games when he's up against certain things. Certain players with a lot of speed and athleticism, and when we see these elite defenses that just hound him into mistake after mistake. Against both the Timberwolves and the Portland Trail Blazers, he was able to get penetration because of the quality of defense that was against him. He was able to hit some open shots. He had a fine game. But these numbers scream great game, and because of so many other things, I can't give him great game. The best I can give him is fine, maybe good, but I'm not going to say, I mean, there are games that Chris Paul put out there that were like his average sort of 17 and 9, which I would trade either of these games for a million times.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, I saw a Clippers blowout the other night where they won by, I think it was like 22 or something, and Chris Paul just had 10 points and 9 assists, and I didn't watch the game, but, you know, I just know that it was better than this performance by Vasquez. I guess what I'm worried about a little bit, to be honest, is it happened both in this game and in the next game against Portland where, you know, Eric Gordon, let's say he does return end of this year, I'm banking more on early to mid-January. If I had to guess, So let's say Gordon comes back. Well, in this game, people say that Rivers was less aggressive in the second half, or he didn't do certain things. To me, I think Greivas Vázquez defended Rivers better than anybody else could that night by just taking the ball out of his hands in a lot of situations, and saw it again in the Portland game where, you know, Rivers didn't have a great game, but I mean, his shot was looking fairly good. He was able to get by people. He had a layup waved off by an offensive foul that was, you know, questionable. But I guess to me, if Vázquez, you know, is going to be playing these 36, 38 minutes and Gordon is coming back and both of these guys are ball dominant, you know, is this going to slow Rivers' progress when Gordon comes back? Because I can't imagine him really getting his looks in a half-court set with either of these guys.
I mean, I'm not actually that horribly worried about that. As long as he's getting minutes out there and he's getting some touches, I think he's going to continue to develop. I think the problem is if you're getting like 10 or 12 minutes in like 4-minute stretches or 6-minute stretches where you're required to come in and make something happen, then people press. They don't really figure out what they're doing wrong. They can't settle in. So if that's what happens, if Gordon and Vázquez are playing 40 minutes a game each and Rivers is getting like nothing in playing time, then that might be a problem. But if he can still get 20 minutes, hoist his, you know, 6 to 8 shots a game, which is pretty much what he's been getting, I'm fine with that. I think he will still be able to develop and, you know, maybe next year take another step forward. But I'm not that worried about it. I mean, and I know where you're going with, you know, the more shots he takes, the better. I'm not sure that's 100% true.
But I mean, do you find it weird? He has 19 points in the first half. He's hitting everything. And I mean, I didn't feel like Minnesota really did anything that drastic with him in the second half. I felt that, you know, Vázquez just became more ball dominant. I mean, do you think that's just because he's a rookie? Because I can't imagine, you know, a veteran in the NBA having that great of a first half, and then all of a sudden, you know, his teammates not just looking for every opportunity to get him the ball, especially, I mean, Rivers came out early in that third quarter and hit another three. I don't know. It's kind of unexplainable to me. How many times have we seen a Hornet have a half like that, you know, outside of Ryan Anderson? I can't remember many guards having a half like that in a while and then just go away from him. And again, like I said, in the Portland game, Vázquez just completely dominated the ball, and Rivers didn't really get many chances to set up the offense and run the offense in that game. I think if Vázquez keeps playing like this, he might rack up kind of meaningless stats and hurt the development of a guy who actually has, you know, high upside.
Yeah, I'm not 100% worried about that. So I should probably give a shout-out to one of our listeners who called in, left a voicemail. Ethan called in, had basically the exact same question that the discussion we just had, which is about Greivas Vázquez, and saying, you know, you can look at his stats and how great they are, but, you know, if you watch the team and you see the slowness at the point of attack, that Vázquez can be a real problem. So we're seeing Vázquez be exposed in all of his issues, but we're also seeing pretty much he's getting every chance to show everything he does really well. Has your opinion of him changed at all? Do you think that he should be that he's still a perfectly fine guard in a 3-guard rotation?
Maybe in another kind of rotation, but this is what I'm saying with Rivers and Gordon. I mean, I think both of those guys, I guess both short-term and long-term, I would rather have the ball in those guys' hands, either running the offense or looking for shots for themselves, or those guys playing the pick and roll, or those guys isolating, than Vázquez. So if Vázquez is going to play with either of those guys, or any guard in the three guard rotation with those two guys, I would want to be, you know, fairly good to exceptional off the ball and also bring intangibles, things to the defensive end, whatever. And Vasquez doesn't do that. So I guess in a vacuum, in a hypothetical three guard rotation, I think that Vasquez can be a third guard for a lot of good teams. But I don't see the fit with Rivers, Gordon, and Vasquez. To me, it would be Rivers, Gordon, and a guy who's just a knockdown shooter off the ball and brings tenacity, almost like a Jason Smith of guards type of tenacity and hustle for 20 minutes a night on defense, diving for balls, et cetera, et cetera.
Okay. I want to get your take on one other thing, though, from that game before we move on to the Portland one. Jose Juan Barrera came in and in the fourth quarter was generally unstoppable going to the basket, which, I mean, you want to mock him because he's not particularly physically impressive, but he did similar things for Dallas against pretty good teams. So he's not a bad player. There's a reason why he got a big contract. But watching that, we complain about the perimeter defense. We complain about our inability to hold, you know, get rebounds. Is there something else we should be really worried about, seeing Jose Juan Barrera cut us up so badly?
I mean, this is a guy who did this against 2 7-footers and Pau Gasol and Andrew Bynum. I forget where I think Monty said this the other day, but I forget where I read this, but whoever said it was right, that these really small guards are actually good at shooting over bigs because they've been doing it all their lives. They know how to get the angles where, you know, the bigger guards, they haven't had that problem in high school and, you know, even at some levels of college. So Barrera has been small all his life. He's one of, I think it is, three players in the NBA right now that I've actually had the privilege of playing against. And he was, you know, even 5-6 years ago before he got into the league, one of the most dynamic scorers I had ever seen. And I don't think there's any shame to getting sliced up by him when he did the same thing in a playoff series against Bynum and Gasol.
Okay. I was thinking you say, so Brian Roberts, Do you see any potential of Jose Juan Barrera and Brian Roberts?
Not in the same style of game. I think there's definitely the jumper aspect and a nice backup guard aspect. I still wish I could find a better comparison because it seems lazy because he was a Hornet as well. But to me, it's just still very Gennaro Pargo-ish.
Yeah, my problem with that, though, is Pargo was not a good shooter. And people forget, you know, he had those big games where he would, like, just drive us into winning position. And you know, in that Spurs playoff series, he brought us back in that big game. But the problem was is he actually wasn't that good of a shooter. There was a stretch at the beginning of that season where, you know, he and Bobby Jackson were competing to see who could shoot more games under 35%. Yeah, so I don't know. I don't know if I can make that comparison. He almost reminds me more of like an Earl Boykins.
Okay.
Because Boykins could actually hit from deep.
Yeah. Yeah, and maybe, I mean, it depends. I haven't really seen the range yet, but, you know, a Daniel Gibson who brought you shooting and not much. I mean, Gibson had the benefit of playing with LeBron, so he got a lot of open looks that Roberts hasn't had the privilege of getting yet, so I really don't know if he's as knocked down of a shooter, but I could see something like that.
So since we're talking Brian Roberts, and we're going to move on to the next game, unless you had something else to say about the previous one.
No.
Brian Roberts gets 4 minutes in that game.
Yeah.
Good or bad?
I mean, in this one, I think Monty just wanted to go with Vasquez because this was one of the few times Vasquez was going against somebody who just gave him 5 or 6 feet of space. I mean, Lillard never pressed up on him. And before I hear about how great of a game this is by Lillard, I want to remind people that, you know, this is a game that's played on two ends of the court. And, you know, Vasquez just had as much room as he wanted to get where he wanted. And that's not normally how most teams play him. So I think Monty had to go with Vasquez because he had, you know, somewhat of a matchup in his favor. But I don't understand why. I still don't understand why Roger Mason plays 18 minutes. So yeah. Some of those go to Roberts or some of them to Rivers, but not to Roger Mason, please.
Yeah, I'm a little surprised by Roger Mason's minutes there as well. He just doesn't do enough. But I know why Monty pulled Roberts. There was two plays in a row where Lillard went over the screen and Roberts ran into the screener and stopped. He didn't try to fight under. He didn't try to fight over. He didn't try to recover. He didn't try to guard anybody. He hit the guy and stopped and didn't move anywhere.
Yeah.
And that pretty much destroys your defense. It kills your rotation. One of them, he stopped. The ball swung around, swung back, went to the corner to Batum. And then Roberts realized, oh, maybe I should run over there. And by the time he even started moving, Batum had shot. So that was why he was pulled. I still would have preferred to have seen him come back in a little bit more because he does bring a different thing to this team when he's out there, which is, you know, somebody who can actually pull up mid-range, come off his curls and hit because he has the speed to get enough room. So it would have been nice to see him out there a little more. But, you know, I'm not shocked that he was yanked after those two defensive plays. Here's the man of the hour. No question about it. Ryan Anderson, the man is amazing. I don't know what else to say, but I mean, that game was an unbelievable blowout in favor of Portland. If Ryan Anderson was, you know, twisted his pinky in a little off in this game.
Yeah, and it would have been a game won by the Hornets if the refs felt half the way about Ryan Anderson that you and I do.
Yeah, there was some pretty questionable non-calls.
There was a baseline jumper of his where, I mean, it was more of a floater jumper, whatever, that he was hacked by two people. There was the Aldridge push-off for the jumper to put him up 92-89 before Austin hit that nice three. I mean, there was just a couple of plays where I'm getting so tired of harping on it, but I can't, you know, act like I don't notice it so often. If he just had half the respect from the refs that he deserves, you know, he would be putting up even bigger numbers. But yeah, 26 points on 16 shots, hitting his threes.
7 of 10.
Yeah, and I was kind of surprised. I think it was interesting to me when Portland – you know, Wes Matthews tried to play in this game, but he's really been banged up and he only got 4 minutes before he had to sit down. And what they did essentially was put Batum at the two and put him on Austin Rivers. I was really surprised that we didn't see Batum hounding Ryan Anderson. I mean, Portland was looking for him at all times, but they still didn't have really a lockdown defender on him. And I was surprised they didn't do that. And on the other end, I think he did an admirable job on Aldridge overall. Aldridge hit some really tough shots. But overall, yeah. Anderson played him well, and he kept him off the boards. I wish we could say the same for the what became the Anthony Davis versus J.J. Hickson matchup, which I felt was just completely one-sided.
Well, I mean, it wasn't even just Anthony Davis versus J.J. Hickson. It was Anthony Davis and Robin Lopez versus J.J. Hickson, and neither of them had a prayer in keeping him away from the glass.
Do you feel that Anthony Davis, if you're sitting down with him tomorrow in the coach's office, do you say to him, tough night last night, but you played hard? Do you think that Davis would be worthy of that praise? Do you even feel that he played okay to where that wouldn't be an issue that you brought up? Or I guess do you feel like I do, in that he just played completely lethargic for about 90% of that game, save for when Portland fouled him hard and he came, you know, got a little angry for a minute or two there.
Yeah, I thought Davis was more interested in the offensive end than the defensive end, which is really weird for, you know, a guy who got his reputation on defensive chops. I don't know if I can say that he just gave up, because, I mean, Hixon is a big body and he just pushed Davis around, and after a while Davis wasn't in position and he would just kind of swipe at the ball because he wasn't going to get it anyways. He was giving up on some of those plays. I'm not going to disagree with that. I don't know.
Those are just rebounds. I'm talking about just standing and watching. Or there was a play where he tripped and fell on the defensive end, and then he finally got up and the ball was still being rotated and he was just kind of walking towards his man. There was just so much walking, and people were, you know, the excuse was, well, he's still not in condition after the injury. But he was obviously resting all during halftime. He got about the first 6 to 8 minutes of the second half off, came off the bench. So that's 30 to 35 minutes in real time where he got to rest. And he came back, and even then he was just kind of loafing on both ends. It's just, I guess what I'm saying, if Anthony Davis played with Lance Thomas's energy and effort tonight, the Hornets win this game by 10. I mean,
yeah, I can't disagree.
Yeah, you could say that Hixon had a great, but Hixon played like his pants were on fire, and he was hustling. And I mean, you say that there's nothing they could have done about it. They could have done something. They could have actually played with some intensity, but, you know, he didn't. And that was such a disappointing part of the game for me. And if he's not going to play with intensity when the Hornets are on this big losing streak against a guy who is trying to take away and probably could take away Rookie of the Year from him, like, I don't know. I don't like that. I wouldn't mind if he was going around making mistakes and missing shots, but the lack of effort and intensity and energy from a 19-year-old kid, like, what, he's not saving his body. So that was by far the most disappointing part of the game to me today.
I don't know if I'd kill him quite as much as you do. I mean, I think he could definitely play harder. I would also say that I think Anthony Davis is not physically prepared for the NBA right now, and I think it's showing. In the game against Minnesota, they had to pull him. He was working hard in the fourth quarter, and they had to pull him out because he just was getting beaten. He couldn't get to things. He was getting shoved out of the. He just looked exhausted. And, you know, he played 34 minutes tonight against, you know, a pretty bruising guy in J.J. Hixon. I'm not saying, like, I mean, he could play better, but I think he probably does need to have a year or two of development before I expect him to always be able to go for 34 minutes at a pretty high level.
All right. I just, like I said, and maybe it was, and we could talk about him a little bit, how differently Lance Thomas was playing in his 17 minutes, but, you know, goes 4 or 5 from the field, gets 8 points, 7 rebounds in just 17 minutes. Did a good job when he was on Aldridge, a guy bigger than him, really closed out on his rotations. There was a couple of times when Babbitt could have had, you know, and probably against other Hornets defenders would have had pretty wide open corner threes that Thomas closed out on. I was really impressed, and with Jason Smith being injured, he's going to get, you know, an opportunity here, and I think at least in this first game of that extensive opportunity, he played really well.
I agree. I think, I mean, Lance Thomas is the reason why we came back in the game, when you combine it with the fact that the Blazers did take their foot off the pedal a little bit. I mean, that's the first thing we have to mention is the Blazers in the third quarter were playing with the Hornets. I mean, they were. It was an alley-oop dunk fest, and it was actually kind of embarrassing. And that's when Lance Thomas entered the game, and he dirtied things up. And since and like he played good solid defense, particularly on Batum, who I mean, Batum on Henry was a joke. I mean, I don't know how you try to defend Batum. Batum is not the quickest person in the world. He's an athlete. He can jump. He can run pretty fast in the open floor, but he's not like a guy who's got a first step that blows the league away. Clearly not. He's not like a dramatic scorer in the NBA. But, I mean, Henry would shade him one direction, and Batum would take that and be gone, and Henry wouldn't be in the screen anymore. He was that far behind. And, of course, Henry was always shading him without any awareness of what was happening behind him. So he shades him left to baseline with the idea, I guess, that Lance Thomas is somehow going to help him. But Aldridge has already faded to the right, up towards the three-point line, and Lance has to follow him. So there is nobody nearby. And Henry still shades him to the left towards baseline and lets Batum go in for a dunk. That's just one play, but that kind of stuff was happening all the time when Henry's trying to guard him. I mean, Henry and Aminu are a disaster.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, there's minutes going to guys on this team, and, you know, I know that we don't tend to think of ourselves as one of the worst teams in the league because we have all these excuses for why we have so many losses based on injury. But the fact of the matter is that you have fairly significant minutes. I mean, you have a full game's worth of minutes going to Henry, Mason, Dominique McGuire, and Al-Farouq Aminu. Like, I mean, that's 52 minutes right there to those four guys that I don't think would see a minute of playing time on a legitimately good team, and they're playing, you know, combined significant minutes for us. So, I mean, this is one of the worst teams in the league, like it or not, and just going to have to bear with it for, you know, probably the rest of the year.
Yeah. I mean, there's not a whole lot you can do, really. I mean, with this particular roster, there's so many holes to fill. And, you know, because we get blinded by the idea of, you know, having, you know, three top 50 guys on the team with Davis and Anderson and Gordon, you can kind of, like, ignore the fact that the rest of the team is so bad. But when Gordon's not around, it doesn't really matter. So, anyways, was there anything else? I mean, Damian Lillard, I thought Lillard looked exhausted for probably half that game.
Yeah.
And, he's been averaging 41 minutes a game in December.
Yeah, he's a guy that, I mean, I don't think, I have no problem saying he's a good player. Like, really, how good or bad he is not going to have any impact on Davis and Austin Rivers. They're going to be as good as they become regardless of Lillard's existence or not. So, you know, I don't try to hate him because of Rookie of the Year or because Lillard versus Rivers, whatever. You know, he's a guy that just, I think for his career, is going to be a terrific catch-and-shoot player, you know, an above-average just outside shooter overall, whether it's mid-range or three. But, you know, I don't think he really has the complete package. I mean, how does he not try to get into the lane more with Vasquez covering him? It seemed like whenever the Hornets would show or hedge on a pick and roll, he wasn't able to get outside of that. I mean, I think he's a good player. He's obviously a guy that broke our hearts with that last second shot tonight. A shot that, I mean, that was a tough shot. I don't think he makes it any more than 2 out of 10 times. It was contested by Ryan Anderson, and it was you know, just frankly a tough shot. He made it good for him, but you know, I didn't walk away of this game thinking that, you know, it seemed like on my Twitter feed, people were acting like he had just locked up Rookie of the Year, and I don't even feel like this was one of his best 10 games of the season.
Right. So, I mean, you're saying that about Lillard. I can see why people get excited about him. You got to remember how old he is, too. But let's just put it this way. You take Lillard's season so far, you know who he is, his numbers almost exactly match? Mo Williams, when he was playing in Cleveland with LeBron.
Yep. If somebody could go back and look to my NBA comparison, that was exactly who I said he would be, but okay.
And, I mean, Mo Williams, I mean, everything is the same, except Mo Williams actually shot better than Lillard did here. And, you know, Lillard's a rookie, and he'll probably get a little better. So, I mean, I think Lillard might have a little bit more of a future as a driver than Mo Williams did, but I don't think there's dramatically different players.
Yeah, I've always said Mo Williams, Jameer Nelson, who were quasi-all-stars. They both made it once. They were both scorers. Neither were exceptional point guards, but definitely could be a key piece on a very good team if you put superstars around them, which, you know, I really don't think Portland will be able to. I think they'll be in a weird position now over these next couple of years where, you know, they'll be fringe playoffs without the ability to really add stars, and the three guys they have now will always be their three best players, and I don't think that's going to be good enough. But yeah, good player, fine player. Mo Williams, Jameer Nelson are very good players, nothing to sneeze at, but you know, I still don't have any worries that, you know, whether or not Anthony Davis, even after I blessed him for his lackadaisical effort, that Davis is going to be the best guy coming out of this class when it's all said and done.
So one last thing I wanted to mention, Robin Lopez, 20 minutes in that game. And he opened the game aggressive and scoring and looking decent. I mean, he missed a couple shots normally I think would go down for him. And one of them he even recovered and put back. But after that opening salvo in like the first 3 minutes of the game, complete non-entity, and he was murdering us on the pick and roll in that game. I mean, over and over, it was a pass to Batum for a ball reversal, and Batum just threw it over the top to whoever was wide open because Lopez couldn't recover and wasn't in the paint to guard anything. They just kept running the same pick and roll where you know, Lopez's guy would come out on the ball, and it was over from that. I mean, easy scoring.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't really know what to say here because, again, I've always maintained, I think you maintain, he's a great fourth big. He's a fourth big on a very good team. And, you know, in all honesty, if you're measuring him as a starter and if people had these huge expectations that, you know, they seem to have with Lopez, then they're just going to be disappointed. But if he's there getting minutes against Myers Leonard or, you know, in the minutes when Hickson's off the court and they're going small ball with Luke Babbitt and LaMarcus Aldridge at the four and five, you know, if he's getting 18 minutes against those guys, he's going to play very well. But quite honestly, where he's having to play against the starters on opposing teams, and he's not that good. He is not a legitimate starter in this league. So, you know, he's going to have nights like this and more nights like this as we go along.
And so that is a perfect segue to a call-in that we got that I wanted you to listen to and respond to. So here we go.
Hey guys, it's Craig from Baton Rouge. My question is, do you guys think we've seen Davis have more time at center? Whenever he comes back into the starting lineup, do you see him replacing Lopez instead of Ryan Anderson? Thanks.
Yeah.
So what do you think?
That's a really interesting question. I mean, to me, there's a lot to be said for having Ryan Anderson come off the bench and pack a scoring punch because, especially if you have Austin in the starting lineup, you know, that bench, it's going to be hard for anybody really to score and you know, I could see that as a benefit. So starting Anthony Davis at the power forward, but you know, again, I don't know if you could play the game that way. Anderson and Davis are definitely your best two big men, and you would want them on the court to maximize them as much as possible, you know, especially on the offensive end. And if Lopez isn't giving you rebounding, then what really is the argument for starting him over Ryan Anderson? So I don't know. I think at least while Eric Gordon is gone, then, you know, perhaps Davis comes back in at the four, and that way you could have Ryan Anderson as a spark off the bench. But if Eric Gordon comes back, I would be tempted to go Anderson and Davis at the four and five, because, you know, you got Rivers as a spark plug off the bench, and could put Lopez in that second unit where he could thrive. So I really don't know what Monty's going to do. I think he's going to stay conservative and play Lopez at center, but gosh, I would love to see Anderson and Davis start at the four and five for the rest of the year and just work the kinks out now.
So I'm going to put on my Ryan Stradamus hat, which doesn't work because I'm usually wrong, but I'm still going to pretend. This is what I think is going to happen. I think Anthony Davis will remain coming off the bench until they reach a team that they can match up better against with Davis at starting center than Lopez, and Monty can use that as a reason to ease Robin Lopez back to the bench. And I also think I think Monty probably wants Davis to come off the bench for another week or two to get back into the flow of things, and then he'll make that move. So I fully expect that come January 1st or somewhere right around there, the Hornets will be placing Anthony Davis in the starting lineup. And I think Monty has recognized finally 100% he needs Ryan Anderson on the court 34, 35 minutes a game to have any chance of winning. And Ryan Anderson is never going back to the bench again.
All right. Yeah, I mean, I think long-term that's where they have to go. And to me, I think playing for the short-term, trading for the short-term, you know, whatever, is almost idiotic right now. I mean, there's no chance this team is making the playoffs. Zero. So, I mean, to me, if and when you are going to become a legitimate contender, Anderson and Davis are both playing 35 plus minutes a game and both starting. So why not just go for it now? And, you know, and that's kind of my feelings also with Rivers. And I would be tempted to just go with the Rivers, Gordon, Anderson, Davis, starting those guys four out of the five and work through all the kinks and flaws and, you know, stuff now, so those guys learn to play together. Because if this team is going to win long term and they're going to keep Gordon, those are going to be the four key guys. So what is the point of, you know, kind of doing all these lineups for matchups, you know, for this year? I don't care. Let's lose and, you know, figure out how to play together. So
here's my prediction: Saturday, December 29th against Charlotte, Anderson starts.
Oh, okay. I thought you were saying Eric Gordon return.
No, I don't know when Eric Gordon's going to return. I'm not even going to pretend to know that. I'm not even going to pretend to know if Eric Gordon's going to play a single game as a Hornet ever.
I started up a little return date pool, and I locked in at January 9th, which, you know me, that's crazy optimistic for me when it comes to Eric Gordon, but I'm gonna try to be optimistic for once.
So what do you think? And this is just, I'm playing with this idea. Do you think it would be crazy for the Hornets to run Grievous Vasquez as their small forward?
I mean, as if it's a real position. I don't know. To me, it's just, I don't even know how to answer that question, I guess. He's so flabbergasted me. Sure, you know, let him play there. Let a couple people play around. Again, as long as Austin Rivers is actually getting touches and Vasquez isn't just, you know, dominating the ball, then sure, you can play him wherever you want. I really don't care about Vasquez at this point. I don't care about Aminu. I don't care about Henry. To me, those are just all obstacles in the way of guys like Rivers, Davis, and Anderson flourishing. Those are the guys I have my eyes on as far as the guys who are going to be future pieces of this team. So, sure, play them wherever you want. We're not winning anyway this year. Just don't let them get in the way of the growth and development of my foundation pieces.
Okay.
I'm sorry, but, I mean, people need to look at the schedule because it's not getting any easier. It stays hard through Christmas, have a couple of maybe winnable games before the new year, and then that January schedule is absolutely brutal, in which I think there's like 16 or 17 games in January, and I see maybe one that will be favored in. So,
let's just be honest here. This is such a bad team. I mean, what team will they be favored against at this point? Sacramento?
And that is the team that they will be favored against in January.
I mean, the Wizards, maybe they'd be favored against, but didn't they just lose to them?
I mean, you would think even a bad team should be favored against 6 to 8 teams at home. I mean, the Sacramentos of the world, the Phoenixes, Charlotte, Toronto, Detroit. Like, you should still be favored against 6 to 8 teams at home in the league, but only one of those, are going to be played in January. This schedule, it's really bad. To me, it doesn't let up till March. March is our somewhat, decent month as far as where you could get some wins. So it's going to be a...
That's actually a danger. You don't want to have a team that suddenly plays really well in March and April and your GM thinks, well, maybe I have something, and stands pat on certain people.
Yeah. Well, look at us looking ahead to March. Let's look ahead to the first couple of games of this week and slow our roll on March. We got Golden State and go back to the Clippers minus Jay Smitty. Which game would you rather talk about?
I'll take the Clippers. You roll with Golden State. I want to hear what you think about this team, because early on, before the season started, we were not high on this
team. And it appears that their only kryptonite is the Orlando Magic. I mean, they have been beat down by the Orlando Magic twice in December. Other than that, they've won every single game this month, and even, the two dating before that. Basically, over the past 3.5 weeks, they've gone 8-2, and their only two losses have been to the Orlando Magic, which is kind of odd, but they're playing really good defense. Steph Curry is a legitimate MVP candidate at this point of the season. Definitely a guy who should be in heavy consideration for his first All-Star game. David Lee's putting 20 and 10 up every night. And I mean, this is a team that was supposed to turn it around defensively with Andrew Bogut, and he hasn't played yet, and they're playing solid defense. And the last thing, and I find it kind of funny, because now all Hornets fans pine for this guy and wish we had him. But Jarrett Jack and even to an extent Carl Landry have been absolutely fantastic for Golden State.
Well, I mean, I don't have too much to say about Jack and Landry. They are average basketball players. Landry's better than that when he's got his offensive mojo going, and he's got it on full blast here in Golden State. But I don't know, Steph Curry, he's my one shining hope for Eric Gordon, if that sounds kind of stupid to say. I mean, Steph Curry, 3 years ago, I would have traded anybody on the Hornets team that wasn't named Chris Paul for a chance at having Steph Curry on the team, because he was such an amazing basketball player. Then, of course, he had two seasons where his ankle was made of paper mache. He couldn't stay on the court. Even like his previous season, he had been, in and out like for 15 games. So he is one of the few people who's had a history of being injured, and he's now come back and playing very well. I mean, I don't know if he's going to continue to play this well all season long, but I mean, maybe Eric Gordon's going to be like that. But I mean, Steph Curry, wow. I wish he had not got signed that extension.
Yeah, and I mean, he was a guy that was legitimately a possibility in the Chris Paul trade, but CP3 didn't want to go there, but I know he's always been high on Dell's list. But yeah, he's playing good. Jack and Landry again. I mean, people really had problems with Jack last year. I maintain that he was fantastic in the first 44 minutes of games just seemed to try to do too much at the end of games, but I don't know how you could really blame him with the roster that we had. Carl Landry's playing really well. I mean, as a PER close to 20. I mean, that's just a really solid team all around, again, with a kind of a hole in the middle with Bogut missing. But Draymond Green, again, you know, is a guy with a very limited ceiling, is a college player who just did all the intangible things. He's doing the same here. I mean, you look at his raw numbers, he's putting up less than 3 points a game, but I maintain that he's been one of the 5 to 7 best rookies so far this year, just making impacts that you really can't measure. And a lot of the ways that, remember Michael Schwartz talked to us about PJ Tucker, Draymond Green is kind of their PJ Tucker. So there's a lot of interesting players on this team. Harrison Barnes is.
And Barnes and Thompson, they're not even having good seasons up to this
point. No, Thompson's been getting a little hotter lately. But, yeah, I think people thought that he was going to lead this team. A big part of that, though, was because I think they thought Curry, you know, might be in and out of the lineup or might not jump back into form. But with Curry playing so well and, honestly, Jack playing so well, you know, Klay Thompson just really hasn't, you know, found a role for himself yet, but playing well enough. And yeah, Harrison Barnes is doing what a rookie should do, playing about half the game, getting about 9 minutes, having a below average PER, but showing signs that he's going to be a significant piece for this franchise going forward. So yeah, if this team could stay healthy and they get Bogut back, you know, anytime, let's say January, and could play with them the rest of the year, I am buying this team as a playoff team.
Yeah. I mean, it's a little dangerous to say right now, because last year, if we had been recording this podcast at this point and we were playing against Philadelphia, Philly at that time was like the unstoppable monster of the East. They had the best record in the East. Their defense was closing people down. Their offense looked great. And then by the end of the season, their defense was still good, but their offense had completely fallen apart. And it could still happen with this team, because there are a couple guys, I would say, who probably are playing a little bit over their head. But I don't think they're playing enough over their head, and playing enough over their head that, you know, a little improvement by Klay Thompson or even Harrison Barnes, which you'd expect both those guys to get better as time goes on, wouldn't completely, you know, take care of.
Right.
So I agree. This team definitely has playoff written all over.
Yeah, I mean, and even with that Philadelphia example, like, there was people who knew it was kind of a fluke, one, because coming off of the strike shortened season, you know, a lot of things were fluky that year. And two, they had a ridiculously easy schedule that accounted for a lot of those wins early, where, you know, the Golden State has been beating legitimate teams. I mean, they've beaten Atlanta twice. They've beaten Brooklyn twice. They won at Miami. You know, they're actually beating solid teams, Denver, Indiana, Minnesota. So, I don't know. I think this team's for real, and I think it's put together well. And I really think if and when they get Bogut back, that they're going to get that much more dangerous. And I think a big part of this is a guy that in all of the losses that they've had outside of Chris Paul, the guy that I was most worried about when they lost and thought would be the hardest to replace was Mike Malone, who's an assistant coach there in Golden State. And I think Mark Jackson is getting a lot of the credit, but I just have a strange feeling that, you know, Malone is pulling a lot of the strings behind the scenes, and they're playing exceptional defense.
Well, they brought it, right. I mean, they brought in Malone to be the defensive specialist, and that's where this team has improved this year. I mean, their offense is actually a little worse than it was last year.
Yeah.
So, so let's move on. Oh, actually, we got to make the prediction. Golden State Warriors by what?
You're not even given the choice. Yeah, I it's funny because this Hornets team really seems to play better on the road. I think it's because they're in front of enthusiastic, packed houses, and it's just more fun to play in that atmosphere than in front of a couple thousand people at home. So I don't know. If this game was at home, I would say Warriors blowout, but I think that you know, this would be a chance. Golden State's coming off a long road trip. I think the Hornets could stay close, but I still say Golden State by six.
Yeah, Hornets by two.
Ooh. So how do you see that going down? How did it split off?
I like Steph Curry, but I think he'll allow Grievous Vasquez to have one of his better games. And I think that Jarrett Jack will try to prove a point, and I think it will not help the Warriors.
Yeah, and the other thing in the Hornets' favor is Golden State doesn't really turn over teams a bunch. Those are obviously right. The teams to worry about.
And they don't block very often.
Yeah, they are great on the defensive glass. So, you know, a lot of those second choice chance opportunities that the Hornets sometimes rely on might not be there. But, all right, well, good. It'll be good to see an interesting game. And, you know, I think we'll be saying this a lot over the course of the season, but this is one of Dominic McGuire's ex-teams.
He can say that by quite a lot of teams.
Yeah. Okay, so next game, Clippers rematch. To me, what was the most fun game of the season, maybe the most memorable game of the season, at least positively memorable. I guess the one thing is the Hornets will be without Jason Smith in this contest, who was a huge part of the last win. What do you see and what do you anticipate in this game?
So I think the Hornets are going to have their head handed to them on a plate. I mean, the Clippers are a good team. They were suffering a lull when the Hornets hit them, and they were falling apart a little bit. They're back on a roll again. And if you don't think that the Clippers are going to remember what happened in that game last time they faced the Hornets, I mean, I fully expect them to come out with a vengeance and just try to make this a blowout. And I don't expect the Hornets to be able to answer the call.
All right, here's my counter, if I had to counter. I would say that, is there any chance that Caron Butler is going to have another game like he had?
No, but then, of course, Jamal Crawford had a terrible game, and Blake Griffin, do you think Blake Griffin's going to have the kind of game he had against us?
I always think Blake Griffin's going to have that kind of game.
You are really down on Blake. The man averages 18-9 and with 3 assists, and this is like not even a good year for him.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, he's on my wife's fantasy team, and if she beats me, you know, we're in the same league together, and if she beats me, she never lets me hear the end of it. So that's the real reason I'm so anti Blake Griffin. But yeah, I mean, this team is just, it's really interesting because, again, it's just weird guys that are beating you. Like Matt Barnes puts up an amazing game the other night, and he's actually averaging more points per game than Caron Butler. And they just have a wave of guys they throw at you. Willie Green, again, starting at the two. Chauncey Billups be back in this game. It's just I don't know. It's a really interesting team with a lot of different moving parts. I still think where they could be beat is up front. They do not rebound the ball very well. They give up a lot of free throws. So I still think that, you know, if the Hornets really pound the glass, you know, they will have Anthony Davis in this game, which they didn't have the last one. I think there's a chance because, I really think that it's possible that the Hornets maybe as a team are in Blake Griffin's head and they don't get another stellar performance from any of their wings and they crash the glass. I just see a formula here that makes it possible to pull off the upset. Not probable, but possible.
You know what's weird about the Clippers? And I have the same general feeling I think you do about them. You look at this roster, and it's littered with people I like to sneer about. I mean, if I like Chris Paul, clearly. But Jamal Crawford, he has spent his entire career playing the way I hate when people play basketball. Blake Griffin, I mean, his stats are amazing, but he's having a down year. He's not rebounding particularly well, and he's got like the huge backlash because he's a schmuck. So people don't like to root for him anymore. Then Matt Barnes is a nobody. DeAndre Jordan, he doesn't know how to play basketball. Caron Butler, his best years are, 5-6 years behind. Chauncey Billups, he's broken down. Willie Green, well, he's Willie Green. Lamar Odom, I mean, he's too busy, serving the Kardashians. You just go down the list and you're like, what is there to be afraid of here?
Yeah.
And the weirdest part about this team is if you look at its success last year, and if you look at like those win shares and how much various people, it was all Chris Paul and Blake Griffin. All Chris Paul and Blake Griffin. But, I mean, they end up being a really good team, and that kind of points, in my opinion, to Chris Paul.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely the biggest part of it. I also think that you're right. All of those guys you mentioned, when you have to depend on them heavily, make you sneer and you hate their type of game. But the Clippers have so many of them that when those guys are having an off night, they have the luxury of just not playing them and putting in another 50-50 guy. And all they need is two out of those six or seven guys to be on the better version of themselves for that night. And when you combine that with Chris Paul and Blake, they'll win. So because they've collected so much quantity, they just, they could afford to get by as long as just one or two of them are decent.
Yeah. We haven't mentioned Eric Bledsoe. Eric Bledsoe is sporting a 24.2 PER. He's kind of becoming the Hornets fan dream at the moment. You had a piece up about him as a potential target for the Hornets. I want you to repeat and tell everybody who listens here, what percentage chance do you give the Hornets for landing Eric Bledsoe for this Hornets
team? I said 20 because I'm 100% believe that he gets traded. I went through every team that might be willing to give up a decent package for him or even want an upgrade at starting point guard. And to me, there was only five teams, including the Hornets. So to me, simple math, 20% chance.
So here's the question, though, for Bledsoe. His contract, I mean, he's still young, but his contract will be up pretty soon. Do you think that that might be a problem for the Hornets, that he might be demanding too much money when he gets there? Or do you not even care? Just collect the guy and see what
he asks
for.
Yeah, you're in a position. Again, I don't know about that point guard position demanding too much money. I think Eric Gordon was something different, and even James Harden to an extent, because shooting guards, you and I have gone through this before, there's like four or five really good shooting guards in this league, another four or five that are passable, and then the rest of that position is just downright horrid. With point guard, seriously, if you look across the league, almost every team has, their present and future at point guard, and so to me, those prices don't get overinflated. So I would think that at most, you would look at a contract similar to what, like a Drew, I mean, there's no way that he's going to be further along than Drew Holiday was this summer as far as production. So I think it would be hard for him to even get a Drew Holiday type of contract. So I wouldn't be as worried about it, because I think point guards, because there's so many in the league, are the one position where you don't really have to overpay to keep your own.
I think you're
absolutely right. I mean, for people who don't really believe you, I'm going to rattle through the top PER guys, and you stop me when I say a name that you think Eric Bledsoe is clearly better than.
Right,
this
and
guy,
people
okay?
have to remember, clearly better than, and the reason why that matters is because if you're a team, you would have to give up things additional to get this player over the one you already have. So he has to be clearly better for you to give up assets.
Right. So let's rattle. Chris Paul, Tony Parker, Russell Westbrook, Kyrie Irving, Kyle Lowry, Goran Dragic, Kemba Walker, and he's a little stretch. Arajan Rondo, Steph Curry, Drew Holiday, Damian Lillard, Mike Conley, Darren Williams, and I'm just going in order of PER so far, Raymond Felton, Brandon Jennings, George Hill, Jose Calderon, Mo Williams, Jeff Teague, Monte Ellis, although he's really a shooting guard, Nate Robinson. Okay, I think that's where I would say there's no way Nate Robinson is
going to be. Derrick Rose is their real starting point guard, so put Derrick
right.
Rose in there. Okay, keep going.
Andre Miller, I guess maybe that's Ty Lawson, but, I mean, he's awesome. Darren Collison.
I don't even know if I could make you stop based on today, I guess based on potential. But that's Dallas was one of the teams out of the five that I had as a possible trade partner.
Right. I mean, below that, there's guys like Jameer Nelson, Brandon Knight in Detroit, our own Grievous Vasquez.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, to me, it's just it's one of those positions that there's so many good ones. And again, bringing this back to Vasquez, this is what I say. Like, people get all upset if you call him a below-average point guard. But to be a below-average starting point guard, that means you're the 17th or 18th best point guard in the league. And with as stacked as, of point guards as we have, that's a compliment. Be called the 17th or 18th best point guard in this league, where it's just there's a good point guard every night. So,
yeah, I even missed somehow. I skipped Jason Kidd in that list, and this year 28 points a game. I mean, not 28 points, 28 minutes a game, and he's still 68% true shooting percentage.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot in the league, and right now I don't believe the Hornets have one. I love the defensive. Potential of being able to get up and press a guy. I mean, per 36 minutes, Bledsoe's steals are right at what Chris Paul's is, a guy who leads the league in steals almost every year. He's just a defensive hound. He still has a ways to go on the offensive end. But again, if you've got him in a three-guard rotation with Gordon and Rivers, you don't exactly need a ball-dominant guy and a guy who puts up a ton of points. Rivers and Gordon will both be able to do that. So, I would really have him circled. I don't know if Monty has the package that he could, or Dell has the package he could put together to get Bledsoe. He would have to obviously put together a better package than anybody else pursuing him. But he would be the one that I would be spending my time trying to wear the Clippers down between now and February.
So you were giving you seem to be kind of positive for this game. What's your prediction?
I think again the Hornets get out to a fairly big lead at some point. I'll say a double digit lead, but I think Chris Paul just doesn't allow it to happen. He eventually puts an end to, another upset bid, and I'll say Clippers by 7.
I think the Hornets get kicked in the nuts and they lose by 15.
All right. I mean, that just hasn't been happening much on the road this year. This team plays...
I feel it.
Oh, so you're saying that you're starting to scout for the 2013 NBA draft.
I will not lie. I went to Draft Express last week and started looking at various prospects.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, going to be a long season.
And I'm also trying to figure out, okay, what small forward? We have all of this space, all this cap space. What small forward can we grab for like $6 or $7 million a year who will come in and be really good for us? And the small forward cupboard is there.
You didn't like my suggestion of Chase Budinger?
I like Chase Budinger a lot, and I think he would fit in on this team. I just don't know if he's the answer as a starter full time.
Yeah. Yeah, I think maybe a timeshare thing where you pay Chase Budinger for 3 or 4 years and then you draft a small forward to develop and, you know, slowly start to shift the minutes where Budinger gets the heavy dose in year one and then they shift and by year three Budinger's the backup. But again, here we are talking about guys who aren't even Hornets yet. Just try to get through this season.
All right, you got anything else you wanted to chat about?
That is it. I appreciate the calls coming in. We got 2 games before our next podcast. So, you know, hopefully we could steal one and just stick with it, Hornets fans. It'll be rewarding. And even on games where you lose, you get rewarded with performances like we saw from Austin Rivers the other night where you really see a nice ray of hope for the future. So,
yep. And Michael just brought it up. I was going to have that. I keep saying I'm comfortable with Austin Rivers and his you know, arc so far this season. Michael's been kind of a supporter even more than I have. I want to get your guys' take on that. What are you guys feeling about Austin Rivers? Are you guys still worried about him? Is he a bust to you? You want him gone? Give us your take. Call in our number 504-322-3333 and let us know what you think about Austin Rivers.
And I also want to know, and maybe you could answer it quick if you choose to, but now that we have hindsight, you know, there are some good rookies so far in this league, but all of them went before Rivers. If you could go back in time, knowing what you know now and how it's played out so far, who would you take at that number 10 pick? Is, you know, for people saying that Rivers was a reach, is there somebody that you would still go back and take now that you've had, you know, nearly 2 months of NBA basketball to watch? So
I'm not going to answer that question. I'll answer it next week.
All right. Thanks, everybody.
Or not next week, really. What, Wednesday night, Thursday? So when we return. So thanks, everybody, for listening to In the Know.
The Aaron's AA team makes getting the name brand furniture, electronics, and appliances you need easy and affordable. We're talking top brands like HP, Samsung, GE, Beautyrest, and so many more. Take them home today, then make low monthly payments until they're yours for good. Aaron's great rent-to-own deals even come with easy approvals and free delivery. That's Aaron's. The rent-to-own power of the AA team.